ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुधीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतिरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टुकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः।
हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू फॉर टुडेस डिस्कशन ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम। वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 टाइटल्ड एज द हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिला एंड वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम वर्स नंबर 54।
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्ता व्यक्तं भवत्युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा। लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्ता व्यक्तं भवत्युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा। लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्ता व्यक्तं भवत्युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा। लब्ध्वा हैविंग गॉटन निमित्तम् द कॉज अव्यक्तम् अनसीन और अननोन टू द पर्सन व्यक्त अव्यक्तम् manifested and unmanifested or the gross body and the subtle body bhavati come into being uta certainly yatha yoni exactly like the mother yatha bijam exactly like the father swabhavena by the natural tendency paliyasa which is very powerful. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation, the fruitive activities a living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. This unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies. Because of his intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. The gross body, purport, the gross body is a product of the subtle body. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 8.6, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitah. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. The atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. I'll read that again. The atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. Thus, the gross body acts during one's lifetime and the subtle body acts at the time of death. The subtle body, which is called linga, the body of desire, is the background for the development of the particular type of gross body, which is either like that of one's mother or like that of one's father. According to Rig Veda, if at the time of sex the secretions of the mother are more profuse than those of the father, the child will receive a female body. And if the secretions of the father are more profuse than that of the mother, the child will receive a male body. These are the subtle laws of nature which act according to the desire of the living entity. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna at the time of death, the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body but will immediately get a spiritual body and thus return home back to Godhead. This is the process of transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through packs of sense gratification that can never be achieved, it is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. Vandeham Shri, sorry. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So, we are reading from the life of Ajamila, or the history of the life of Ajamila, and we discussed yesterday of how the three modes of material nature influence our senses. Actually, Arjuna Prabhu gave a beautiful class yesterday. One must act by his natural tendency according to the three modes of material nature, because his natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. So the swabhava, swabhavastu pravartate. And in this verse, the Yamadutas are saying the fruitive activities a living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for what? For our subtle bodies and the gross bodies. The fruitive activities. So what are fruitive activities? Yeah. What is it called as in Sanskritam? We call it as karma kanda. Karma kanda means any activities that is done, not even karma kanda, because karma kanda is actually based on scriptures. Sense gratification is an appropriate word. So the scriptures are actually in one sense advanced science. Activities that a person does, as and when he is doing the activities, the destination, he is determining his next destination. So in case of fruitive activities, the results are fixed. The results are pious or impious. Whether he is doing pious activities or impious activities, the destination is also determined based on what he is doing. It is said that whatever activities that the jiva is doing, as and when he is doing, what is he developing? He is developing consciousness, because the activities are feeding into his consciousness. These are being stored. In fact, in the shastras, in the scriptures, I shouldn't be even saying scriptures. These days, scriptures are taken as a very derogatory term. I should say scientific journals. Then probably the ears will stand up. You see, timeless scientific journals. It is said that the modern science knows two things or two faculties in which the memory and the recall of memory happens. One is the brain and one is the mind. Right? The mind itself has two connotations in the Sanskritam or even in the Yoga Paddhati. It is called as Chitta and Manas. Chitta is a place where all the impressions get stored, and the mind actually chooses between these impressions. That is why Manas, the definition of Manas is Sankalpa Vikalpatmakam Manaha. So it is the Sankalpa and Vikalpa. Sankalpa means to accept, and Vikalpa means to reject. This is the activity of the mind. But it doesn't recollect or memory. The memory shell is actually the Chitta. So when you do a japa, you know, a lot of thoughts come up. You know, what should I do in my office today? What is my plan? All of this is the functions of the Chitta. That is why in yoga abhyasa, Patanjali Yoga Sutras, they say Chitta Vritti Nirodaha. The vritti of the Chitta has to be stopped. Chitta's always problem is it goes back to memory, it goes back to future and oscillates between future and past. And when it comes up with a thought, the mind selects one thought. And then the intelligence starts working to either fulfill that thought or either remorseful on the past. So this is how the activities of the Chitta and the Manas and the Buddhi works. So as and when the jiva is executing these fruitive activities, he is developing consciousness, and these consciousness is actually storing impressions in his mind. So yesterday, Arjun Sakha Prabhu explained beautifully of how the mind is paving the way for a living entity for his future lives. It is said that one jiva in one lifetime, Madhvacharya says in his works, that one jiva in one lifetime collects up to 10 lifetimes worth of karma. He's already paved the way for 10 lifetimes. His investment is for 10 lifetimes of repetitive births and death. Whether it's human or others, we don't know. But it's at least 10 lifetimes worth in one lifetime. That was probably 700 years ago. I don't know how many times, multiples. It's exponential these days. So it's a very difficult situation. So fruitive activities, the problem of sense gratificatory activities is, it will start storing these impressions in our manas. And then, based on that, we will start having either pious births or impious births. We'll actually discuss a very interesting pastime in Mahabharata of how this is very important. Bhagavatam actually criticizes both. Bhagavatam criticizes even pious activities are not good, because even pious activities are binding for the jiva. And how it is binding, we will see. Because that is why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kim karmeti kim akarmeti, gahana karmano gatihi. The concept of karma and the happenings of karma are very difficult to and very complex to understand. But then what is the way out? So the other side of things is, we still have to do activities. We discussed this, we have been discussing, and this canto is also called as prescribed activities or prescribed duties for mankind. We still have to do activities because we are bound, and we all have certain natures. That is why we have the concept of Varnashrama Dharma as well. But that is why in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, not even the topmost option, but the second option is given as one has to engage his propensities in the activities of bhakti. That is what is called as bhakti yoga. To engage your propensities in the activities of the Lord. Or if, even if somebody cannot do that, then the third option is, at least work for me, Krishna says. Become a karma yogi and give your results to me. Don't sacrifice your results to me. So, to understand all of this, the root of to understand the activities and the impressions, there are two concepts in the Shastras which is exclusively from the Vedic culture. This particular concept is not available in anywhere around the world. What is it? It is called as reincarnation. Reincarnation is, incarnate means incarnate, carnage means flesh. So reincarnation means come back into flesh again. So get another body again, get a material body again. That is reincarnation. And second thing is karma. Karma is the philosophy of karma. So these two philosophies are an exclusive contribution from the Vedic culture. That's why you will see this in Taoism or Buddhism or Jainism or Hinduism. So this philosophy of reincarnation or Buddhism, for that fact, it is an exclusive contribution of these cultures. And these two are quite closely interknitted, karma and reincarnation. What activities one does, he develops such a consciousness. And then, when he develops such consciousness, they work in tandem. The subtle, you all know that we have three bodies. What are the three bodies we have? And spiritual, correct? Actually, there are, in one sense, so we'll just wait for the mic. Can I speak? Will the online audience be not able to hear it? Okay. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, thank you, Prabhuji. So, there are two facts, that is reincarnation and karma. What are the three bodies you suggested? The spiritual, gross and subtle. Subtle is in the in-between. So you have gross body, gross body is what is manifested to our material eyes. Subtle body which we can perceive but we cannot see with our material eyes, and then the spiritual body. Spiritual body is what is experiencing all of this. Now, reincarnation and karma are the determining factor, but what is the most important determining factor for reincarnation? Consciousness at death. That is the crux. You see, the trap gate is the time of death. That is why in the practice of the Eastern spiritual practices, you will see a lot of significance has been given to passing away of the jiva at the time of death and his consciousness at the time of death. That is why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tries to explain in the chapter 8 in detail about how a lot of spiritualists try to exit from this gross and the subtle bondage. It is called as Shodasha. Shodasha means 16 bondages we have. What are the 16 bailis or 16 prison gates we have? What are the 16 prison gates? The 5 karmendriyas, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 motor senses, and the 5 sense perceptions and the mind. So there are 16 in one sense. So breaking of the 16 and stepping into the 17, which is the spirit, and the 18th is the Supreme Spirit or Krishna. So that is what all about the 18th. So that's why Sankhya philosophy are very closely connected. Numerology, mathematics and numbers are very closely connected to philosophy. So ancient spiritualists were also mathematicians. That's why this 18 is very significant. You see, Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. So it's very interesting. Mahabharata was fought for 18 days. things like that. So 18 has a very spiritual significance. So that death, at the time of death, the consciousness at the time of death becomes very detrimental for the jiva. Everything gets tested at the time of death. But one may say, I had a devotee was working in a, he's working in a corporate atmosphere. His friend was suggesting, the devotee was trying to preach to him. His friend said, okay, if it is at the time of death, I'll think of Krishna at the time of death. That's what he was arguing. He never picked up, tried to get into Krishna consciousness. What happened to this person? One day in the office, he had a massive heart attack. This person had a massive heart attack. And the devotee Prabhuji was sitting next to him. He was trying to chant next to him. Of course, he cannot chant loudly because the first thing is first aid has to be given in an official atmosphere. He could see that this person was shouting and screaming out of pain, because heart attack sometimes is a very painful situation. And then after the fact, so the Prabhuji was explaining how this person tried to reject Krishna consciousness. And he said, I can take to Krishna at the time of death, but at the time of when the death was near, all he could do is in pain, cry in pain, because heart attack is a very, because death is a very painful experience. Why? Because it is said that every jiva is given an opportunity at the time of death that he can actually see himself dying. This is a yoga sana also we practice in Shavasana, where you actually get out of the body and see yourself from the ceiling. If you practice Shavasana, you will see in the yoga abhyasa, you assume as if you are floating to the roof and you see yourself lying down and deeply meditating or deeply breathing. This is one of the aspects of Shavasana. So many jivas are allowed to experience this, that I am about to exit my body, but I still exist without my body, but I want that body because that's my only identification that I have developed for all my life. My friends, my family, everything will be snatched away from me. So therefore it's more painful. So he couldn't remember his spirituality or his words that he thought he could remember, he couldn't. So therefore death is a very important incident in every jiva's life. In every jiva's life, and we all go through this, and not once we are going through this experience. We have gone through the experience of death millions and millions of times, and birth. That is why Madhvacharya says in his Dvadasha Sotra, Santatam Chintayon Tantam Antakale Visheshataha. Antakale Visheshataha. So this is the crux that Krishna has put, that all our things, all our consciousness and impressions will be tested at the time of death. And if we have not developed that consciousness every day, every minute, that is not our second nature. So whatever our second nature is, that is what will come up. So therefore, it's very imperative that we develop it as our second nature. Develop what? Develop bhakti, develop remembrance of Krishna. Now, as we said, there were two activities. One is fruitive activities. Fruitive activities will give us pious and impious results. But the problem of fruitive activities is, despite being pious or impious, the destination is material. The destination is material. We will either get a body in the heaven, or we'll get a body in this material world, or we'll get a body in the hellish planets. It is going to be material, fruitive activities. But on the other end, if there are activities, so we still have to do activities, we still have to develop impression, we still have to develop consciousness. So see, the gross body and the subtle body are working with each other. So the gross body works, gains impressions, the subtle body works and develops another gross body. You see, the whole life, the gross body works and collects impressions. At the time of death, the subtle body catches the most important impression and paves the way for another body in the next life. So you see, that's how they work together. But what if, this is the crux, what if we develop impressions in such a way that at the time of death, the subtle body produces impressions by which I will not get any more material destinations, but the destination itself is spiritual. This is what is the endeavor of the entire Vedic culture. To say, I don't want any more of this material destinations anymore. I want to get out of this material destinations. That is what the whole endeavor is in the spiritual practice. Now, when I was doing this, I was just reading some scientific journals of how science is progressing in terms of reincarnation. Because reincarnation is even today seen as mystical or a mysterious subject. The reason is modern science cannot verify the facts. They can only verify by inference. Is it not? So there are three ways to verify it: pratyaksha and anumana. Now, anumana is inference. Anumana is not doubt. Anumana is inference in Sanskrit. Inference means they have studied cases. The cases have recollected their past lives, and that's how there are evidences or proofs of rebirths or reincarnations. So modern science, I was going through Indian Journal of Psychiatry. Again, the Western scientists have kept it aside because they don't want to go into too much of it, because they are traveling on two train tracks. They never join at any end. They're always parallel. So material scientists are always trying to find answers using material means, which they will never achieve, because rebirths and reincarnation is never material. It is at least subtle. It is at a subtle level. So it is at the level of a mind and beyond. So it's very difficult for the material scientists to come to a conclusion. That is why they say reincarnation is a religious belief. I saw many scientific journals say it's a religious belief, despite a lot of psychiatrists documenting monumental evidences about reincarnation. Lot of evidence has been proven, actually. Yet scientific journals say it's a religious belief, this, right? Because if you see, why do they say it's a religious belief? First thing. Otherwise, they can't prove it. Otherwise, sorry. They have to accept Lord. Another problem. They have to reject their Darwin's philosophy. They have to reject theory of evolution. Because now the whole foundation is based on materialism, right? Everything comes from matter. Everything comes from chemicals. But if that is so, how does memory get transformed? We have innumerous examples. We have an example even in our own congregation. Bhakti Charu Maharaj's disciple. She could recollect her past life as a brahmachari, Prabhupada's disciple. So, how does memory get transferred from one life to another? See, one life, the body gets burned, and then a new body takes birth somewhere else, and he still can remember his past lives. Numerous examples, not only in India. This has happened, the research has happened predominantly in other areas apart from India, because if you come to eastern part of the world, people do believe in reincarnation. So the research was conducted in places where reincarnation was not even thought as an accepted fact. So evidences have cropped up from those regions, like United States of America, and regions from where the Islamic world, where they do not believe in reincarnation. So evidences were there from those part of the world. So the journal says, I'll just read a few lines, the biochemist or a doctor would tell us that the individual cells in our body have a limited lifespan from days to weeks or a few years. Using sophisticated carbon dating methods, carbon 14, Dr. Friesen and his team of stem cell researchers in Karolinska Institute, Stockholm, Sweden, found that the average age of the cell in an adult body would be 7 to 10 years. So if we have collected memory, if memory shell was in the brain, a brain cell would be dead by 10 years, right? So that means we are constantly reincarnating, and there are cells being produced constantly, and then constantly our body is different. And Prabhupada always gives this example, dehinosminyatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha deha antara praptihi dhirastatra namuhyati. Prabhupada says, we are seeing it ourselves. Reincarnation is happening every time. If I look at my own photo when I was, if you look at your own photo when you were 3 months old, and now, can you say it is the same Krishna there? No, it's different, isn't it? So you have already reincarnated. So we constantly reincarnate. Dehinosmin yatha dehe. Kaumaram, kaumaram means what? At the age of 5. And then yauvanam, coming at the teenage. And then jara means old age. We've already had different bodies even in this life. See, we can observe, Prabhupada says, what's so difficult? Huh? And when you read the book Coming Back, Prabhupada's discussions with scientists, scientists say it's a question of faith. Prabhupada says, no, it's not a question of faith, it's a question of analysis. Don't think we philosophers do not analyze. We have analyzed. But this analysis is just not philosophy, it's analytical. And you see, it's been proven. So they say, even though the cells die, the scientists couldn't explain our identification of ourselves, the I consciousness factor remains constant and unchanging, even though we may develop changes of our likes and dislikes. Thinking over the years, we always know who we are in the sense of personal continuity, being personal beingness similar to I. So that hasn't changed. See, my body when I was a little baby is different to the body that I have now. But that I, the observer, hasn't changed. Is it not? So where is that I residing? The psychiatrist cannot explain. They cannot explain because everything is material, but the material has changed. Is it not? The trains, if you're on a platform, the trains have come, the trains have gone. So the body has changed. But who is the witnesser, the person who is standing on the platform? That I is constant. So who is that I? The scientists don't want to accept it as jiva or soul. They don't want to say soul, because the moment you say soul, they are going into uncharted waters. Then they will have to be forced to accept something paranormal for them. So therefore, this is what is there in the scientific journals. That's why in the scriptures, in the shastras or timeless scientific journals, it's called a game of consciousness. Life itself is called as game of consciousness. When we take birth and when we die, it's all a game of consciousness. And you see, the whole living itself is to hone our consciousness. Whatever activities we do, we hone our consciousness. How can this activity help me in honing my consciousness? Whatever activity it is. That is why in the Vedic practice or in the Eastern practice, you have samskaras. When someone is born, they do jata karma. They give him a naming ceremony. What is the purpose of a jata karma? What is the purpose of upanayana samskaram? What is the purpose of... What is wedding called as? Vivaha samskar or kalyana samskar. That's why it's called kalyana. Kalyana means auspicious. So vivaha samskar. There are samskaras and then shraddha. Starting from jata to shraddha. These samskaras are transforming our consciousness as the jiva progresses through life. We see only one life, but actually, you know, we have lived many lives. And the continuum of consciousness continues. So therefore, the activities become very important. Take the example of varna and ashrama. Even varna and ashrama are there for honing of consciousness only. See, what are the four varnas? Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshudra. So what is the purpose of a varna? If you really see from a consciousness perspective, I have got a swabhava. We just read yesterday. We've got a swabhava. Use that natural tendency in such a way in the service of Krishna so that you do not pave the way for future bodies. Full stop. So if somebody has a natural tendency as a brahmana, engage yourself in brahminical activities so that you do not take birth again, or you do not have brahminical, or you do not have a material destination again. That is the goal. And Krishna says this very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, if you see. The destination to reach is always remember Krishna. What's the crux of Bhagavad Gita? What is the critical verse of Bhagavad Gita? 9.34. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. That is the goal, to come there. But if you can't come there, then execute the principles of bhakti yoga. So the highest goal is man mana bhava. Always remember me. Always worship me. If somebody can't be at that stage, which is a ragatmika stage, then you do the sadhana bhakti. Execute the principles of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga, Krishna also puts that in the second order. It's not even the topmost order. The topmost order is the order of Jadabharata, the order of Narada Muni. You know, man manava, always remember me, always think of me. So, even varna, brahmana, vaishya, shudra and kshatriya are there to hone our consciousness. And not that one has to always be a brahmana to get liberated. That's also another mistake. That's also... So the problem is, even the scriptural studies, people have misunderstanding that only a brahmana can get liberated. There are still people who believe that. Females cannot get liberated. If you are a female body, they cannot get liberated. You have to become a male only to get... There are people who still believe all of this. It's all blind faith. There is no place of such superstitions in the scriptures. The idea is, no matter what external connotations we have, whether it's a female, male, a brahmana, vaishya, kshatriya, kshudra, doesn't matter. What is the most important factor? The consciousness. That is why Prabhupada named this movement as Krishna consciousness. Bhakti yoga is not an affair of the body. It is not an affair of the subtle body even. It is an affair of the consciousness. What is my thought? That is why It is not the activity that is important. It is the consciousness with which we do that activity that is important. Very important. One may clean the courtyard and one may be in the altar. Being in the altar, one may be doing aarti, but his mind is always engrossed in sense gratification. There could be a possibility. But one could be doing a courtyard cleaning, always thinking of Krishna and worshipping Krishna in his heart while cleaning the courtyard. So he's more glorious actually. This activity doesn't determine. What is important is the inner consciousness with which he's doing that activity. Very important. Somebody might be doing kirtan. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was on in the last stages of his life, he was asking a person who couldn't sing properly to sing to him. Although he was not good in the meters and things like that, he was still saying, no, he should sing for me. Why? Because he could understand his consciousness is very pure. So that is the whole idea. Then when you come to ashrama, what are the four ashramas? Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. Ashrama means our external existence. If I'm a brahmachari, what should be? So again, if you see, you are moving from swadhyaya to sannyasi. You are moving from childhood, then brahmacharya, practice celibacy, and from there determine, can you fight the battle? Because living in this world means fighting the battle. Fighting the battle with whom? With senses, with our own senses, with the three modes of material nature, which is maya. Daivi esha gunamai mama maya duratya, Krishna says. So fighting can be done in two ways. So brahmachari, after doing his brahmacharya vratam for 11 years or 12 years, he decides, okay, now I'm at a juncture where I have to decide, will I continue my battle in the war field? Can I step into my war field? Or do I have to fight using a fort? It's called kileka yudhi. Kila means, you know what it is? Kila means fort. So if he determines that he is strong enough to get into the battleground and fight, he takes to sannyas directly. Sannyasi means stepping into the war zone directly, face to face with the senses. Very difficult. Because sannyasa means the senses will burn him basically. It's not easy to become a sannyasi. So brahmachari decides, if he's strong enough, he steps into sannyas and wages the battle quickly and gets out of the material world very quickly. It's a treacherous war. But if somebody thinks, oh, I'm not ready for it yet, let me go to the fort. Fort means what? You build a fort and fight from within the fort. What is that called as? Grihastha ashrama. And who is the fort? The wife. If you study the section, Kashyapa Muni and Diti, Kashyapa Muni says in the third canto that you protect, Grihini protects the men from attack of the senses. So that's the duty of the Grihini, right? We are talking of Vedic Grihini. So this is the whole idea. So if somebody is not strong enough, then he steps into a fortress battle. The battle continues. That we have to understand. But problem is, most of the people who step into Grihastha, they forget the battle. And they think, I'm very safe within the fort. And then Maya engulfs. Maya japatiya dhari. And then punarapi jananam. So this is the whole idea. And so Varnashrama also means to develop and hone the consciousness. Now, how is reincarnation understood by timeless the scriptures? They say, when we have to leave this body, right, the mind actually hones or dwells on one particular thought, which is the strongest impressions that we have collected. Yesterday Arjun Sukha Prabhu was saying, somebody is watching a lecture and the corner of YouTube, you see a lot of things popping up. And you see, these are all designed. Even if you go to newspaper journals, you'll see very obnoxious images coming up, propping up. That's why internet is a very dangerous place. It's a very dangerous place. If you are not strong enough, very quickly, without even our knowledge, we'll be in a very dark, dark end. Collecting impressions. Collecting strong impressions, which can be produced at the time of death. So very dangerous. That is why a serious spiritualist is very serious about what he speaks, what he thinks, whom he meets, what he discusses with them. Very, very careful. You see Prabhupada always. You've seen Prabhupada do this. He's smiling and laughing. Very next moment he becomes grave. You've seen that? He becomes very grave. See, so very quickly he becomes very grave, and you see his smile stops, and then he's always meditative. So spiritualist is always like that. You will see. Outside people might think it's eccentric. No, it's not eccentric. It is safeguarding one's consciousness. Very careful. This is a matter of insight. It's an interior focus. So the scriptures say, when the jiva holds on to one impression, that impression determines his next destination. So he will be born again with that particular body. And it is said that when he is a child, sometimes they still can remember certain past lives. They want to express it. They want to express their desires, but they cannot. The only way they can express their desires is how? Either cry or laugh. That's what a child does. Child keeps crying or child keeps... because it can't express. It wants to express, but it can't express. With that miserable condition, the baby cries. Or sometimes it laughs, forgetting its past. So it's a very painful state to be a child, because a jiva is not... But the parents are thinking it's nice. It's nice to see the child laugh. And it's patting. Oh, mera ladla, dekho kitna accha bol raha hai, torli bhashan. You know, it's speaking so nicely in the broken language. For everyone, it's fun. But for the child, it's actually a very painful situation for the jiva. So this is how the scriptures say, and how the subtle body is paving the way for future bodies. I'll just quote a scientific evidence given by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, quoted by Chaitanya Prabhu from Colin Waxon. He says, the sheer volume of evidence for survival after death is so immense that to ignore it is like standing on the foot of Mount Everest. Standing on the foot of Mount Everest and insisting that you cannot see the mountain. This is how it is. There is evidence galore, but science says it's still a faith-based belief, reincarnation. So, reincarnation is not a mystic or a mysterious thing. It's a scientific fact. With this, we also know that there are past life regression analysis and things like that. And there are yogis who can actually, with their yogic power, go into our past. Looking at our mind or chitta, they can go into our past and get back our vrittis. And this is even possible even today. In fact, there was an incident in Mumbai where there was a Western bodied person who had come to Mumbai and he wanted to see his, what is this called as? Palmistry. You know? He wanted to go and look at his future and past. The person was a very powerful person, so he could literally see through the light. So when he saw this person, and this person who had come to Mumbai had great interest in Vaishnava theology. He had great interest in Sanskritam. So he had great liking towards especially the Vedic type of living. So he had taken on for almost 2 decades of this type of life. So he wanted to discover who he was in his last life. So when he showed his hand, this person, after looking at his hand, he got up from his seat and paid Sashtanga Namaskaram. He paid obeisances to him. He said, you are a sannyasi in your last life. You are a Vaishnava sannyasi in your last life. So therefore I pay my obeisances to you. So you don't know you are a sannyasi, but now I come to know that you are a sannyasi. Therefore your liking to Vaishnava Siddhanta, Vaishnava philosophy, Vaishnava culture is very apparent. So what has happened? Imagine. So the Western bodied person was in tears. So I didn't finish my life. I didn't finish off business in that life despite being a sannyasi. I fell down again. So he was crying. So what should I do so that I never end up in this situation again? So it's a very difficult situation. With this, I'll just share a story and then we'll stop. You all know the story of Bhishma Dev. Right? When we talk of Bhishma Dev, what do we know? When we talk of Bhishma Dev, He died in the battlefield. Okay, what else? He took a great vow. What was Bhishma Dev's name? Devavrata. That was his name. Bhishma was given by the Devatas. When he took that vow, when he took that Bhishma Shapatam, that vow of celibacy, the Devatas glorified him. Now one may think, why should someone glorify somebody takes a celibacy vow? Because how long did Bhishma Dev live for? Yes, but how old was he? He was 700 years. He could live for 700. His study itself went on for 250 years. He studied Vedas under the Parashuram for 50 years. And then he continued for another 50. Like that, he studied for 250 years. 250 years of his study. Can you even imagine? And then he came back to Shantanu. He was under the tutelage of Ganga Maya. Also. Ganga took care of him. He was the 8th Vasu. When you see Bhishma Dev, you will see only these parlances, right? But the scriptures don't stop here. And he was so faithful that instead of getting himself married, he took a vow to protect whom? To protect his father, Shantanu. He is 250 years old. His father is very old and his father should have found a girl for him. But he goes and says, my father wants to get married to Satyavati. So then I'll take a vow of celibacy. So imagine, everybody says, oh, how obedient he is to his father. This is one picture. Now, let's rewind. Let's go to, this is part 2 of the movie. Let's see part 1 of the movie. Who is Devavrata? He's a Vasu. Ashta Vasus. There are 8 Vasus. Vasurudra Aditya, right? These are all Devatas. These are all from the heavenly planets. There were 8 Vasus. Now, if you go back, there is a movie what happened. What happened was, there are 8 Vasus. And among them, the Jeshta Vasu, the eldest was what? His name was Dyuhu. Dyuhu. And there are names like this in scripture. There are the Gandharva's names as Huhu, Haha, like this. There are names like that. So this guy's name was Dyuhu. Dyuhu had a wife. Her name was Varangi. What was her name? Varangi. As they were, you know, flying in the airplane or whatever, they saw a cow in Vasishtha Muni's farm, Kamadin. Dyuhu's wife Varangi says, I want that cow. Because that cow is so beautiful and attractive and the milk is so nice, I want that cow. Dyuhu said, no, no, that is the sage's cow, I can't steal it. Then you can't do this for me? That is where the movie begins actually. Movie begins there. So, Dyuhu tries to convince Varangi, but Varangi says, what sort of husband you are? What sort of husband you are? You see the neighbor, he has brought a Mercedes Benz, you can't own even Toyota? Go get out and work like a donkey. Get out, get me a car. This is where the problem starts. So, Dyuhu discusses with the 7 Vasus and they finally decide to steal it. Now, Vasishtha Muni also had the Avesh of Brahmadev. Vasishtha Muni had the Avesh of Brahmadev also. Brahma doesn't have a direct incarnation. Do you anywhere see Brahma's direct incarnation? No. But Brahma has permitted to allow Avesha incarnation. So he can have Avesha in certain. So Vasishtha also had Avesha of Brahmadev. Just as we see, who was Brahmadev in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela? Haridasa. So he has Avesha incarnation for Brahmadev. So Brahmadev then cursed the 8 Vasus. That may you all be taking birth in the Mrityu Loka. In the planet Earth or the Bhur Loka. And then may all be cursed. And then he had a special curse for the elder one. Because he was the one who was supposed to guide. You got carried away because of the desire, selfish desire of your wife. So may you take birth and live very long in the Bhuloka. First thing. Second thing, may you remain unmarried for that length of life. Second curse. Third curse is, may you be born and not be killed by Ganga. So, the 3 verses he gives, but basically then the 8 verses immediately come to their senses that they made a big mistake. Because this is the divine, they are not demoniac nature, they are divine. So, api chetsu durachara, they quickly come back to their senses that they made a mistake, we are sorry. And then Vasishtha Muni says, okay, in that sense you will be born by Ganga Maya and then 7 will be delivered. But the 8th one, the elder one will get punishment. Major punishment is for him only. So you will be spared, you will have a long life, you will be unmarried and you will go through great tribulations because of your own, who? Wife. Okay. So what happened? You all know the story. 7 Vasus were born, Ganga had a deal with Shantanu. 7 Vasus, as soon as they took birth, they went back. Because Ganga may have put them into the river. The 8th one got saved because Shantanu stops him and then Ganga takes him away and then brings him back after a long period of study. And then when he takes the vow of Bhishma Shapata that I will be remaining celibate, people think, what a glorious person he is. Right? So he's actually, it's great piety to actually take a vow. But that piety, the Shastras say, he's taking because it's an effect of the curse that he should remain unmarried. You see? One might think it's a blessing that he's doing so great deed to his father, but actually he's executing the curse. He's under the curse. Although married in the Vasu Sampradaya as his wife, he now takes a vow of celibacy that he remains unmarried. From one picture you might see he's doing a great job, but actually it's an effect of the curse of Vasishtha Muni that he has to remain unmarried. And because to fulfill that curse, he takes a vow that I should remain unmarried. Although it is still glorious from the perspective of that he is Bhishma Deva. So you see, the Shastras have different ways to see the same. That's why Mahabharata, ekavakyam dasharthe, one vakya of Mahabharata can be understood in 10 different dimensions. So one dimension is, yes, Bhishma Deva is glorious, but the other dimension is, it's actually a curse that he had to fulfill. Now, the second part of the story starts, the third part of the story starts. Who is, what happened to Varangi? Where did she go? Because of that one impious desire, she had to take birth as Kashi Raja's daughter. You know who she was? Amba. Amba, Ambalika and Ambika. She was born as one of the daughters. And see, the destiny, Bhishma Dev goes, abducts all of them. Ambika and Ambalika decide to get married to Vichitravirya. But Amba rejects. Because in those days, generally Mahabharata we know only from the serials, but scriptural, if you see Mahabharata from a scriptural point of view, with which Vedavyasa has written, not the general Mahabharata that's available outside, Amba, generally Rajakanyas at those days usually used to get happy when they used to be abducted. Why? Because it's a question of pride that Kshatriya king has come to abduct me. That means I'm very precious. And they used to be very proud. Till then they were not giving up their decision to marry anyone. So whoever abducts me, I'm going to get married to him because he is the most strongest. In this case, although they were getting about to get married to Brahmadatta, Amba was kidnapped by Bhishma Dev, and they say, we are happy to get married to you, Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev says, no, I didn't kidnap you to get married to me. I want you to get married to my brother Vichitravirya. So then Ambalika and Ambika agrees, but Amba says, no, I don't want to. Because Ambika and Ambalika decide, oh, if Bhishma Dev is so strong, Vichitravirya also should be equally strong. So they come to that conclusion, because usually they had that thing that somebody strong should be my husband. Amba says, no, I'll only marry you because you have abducted me. So that is where the problem starts. Bhishma Dev says, no. And he releases her. Then she goes to Shalva. Shalva narrates Brahmadatta. Shalva narrates Brahmadatta. So Brahmadatta says, no, you have been touched by Bhishma Dev, so I can't marry you. Actually, that was not the fact. The fact is, he's afraid of Bhishma Dev because this Bhishma Dev can come and kidnap again. So he's afraid of Bhishma Dev. So Shalva narrates says, no. Amba oscillated between Bhishma and Shalva Naresh for almost 7 to 8 years, being rejected by Bhishma, rejected by Shalva. You see, what is happening? Because of that impious desire of Varangi, she is facing 8 years of insult in the Bhurloka. Then what does she do? The story doesn't end. She goes to whom? She goes to Parashuram to complain on his disciple. Your disciple has done this to me. He kidnapped me. Blah, blah, blah. And so much so, because of that impious desire, she made him to fight against his own spiritual master. See where all the story goes. But of course, Parashurama is the Supreme Lord. Generally, they say Parashurama lost to Bhishma Dev, but he didn't lose. He wanted his disciple to win. So it was an arranged arrangement by the Lord. So much so that this loving wife of Duhu transforms into the most hatred relationship between husband and wife only. Bhishma Dev and Amba are husband and wife, Duhu and Varangi. But so much hatred starts developing. If this guy doesn't marry me, I will be the cause of his end. So then she takes birth again as Shikandhi. She becomes the instrument for the destruction of Bhishma Dev. So much hatred, so much love gets transformed into so much hatred. This is called Maya ka khel. Can you see that? That is why piety and impiety, you cannot decide anything based on that. If you see, there is a lecture, there is a discussion of Prabhupada in Prabhupada room here with some socialists in Melbourne. Prabhupada discusses here, and the socialist asks Prabhupada, Swamiji, if a person helps a blind woman to cross the road, is it not good? Is it not good? Is it good or not? If I help a blind woman to cross the road, is it good or not? What is Prabhupada's answer? What does Prabhupada answer? Prabhupada says, only God is good. What does that mean? What it means is pious activities in itself will not take us anywhere, as you saw Bhishma Dev. He was doing the most pious activity by taking celibacy. But did it help him? He is actually executing the curse. Because unless one brings Krishna in his life, then all of the pious and impious activities are just maya rakhir. It's all maya ra vaibhav. It's just maya ra vaibhav, nothing else. So that is what this verse is talking about. Labdhva nimittam avyakta vyakta avyaktam. The subtle body and the gross body is just a nimittam. It's just an instrument for us of our consciousness. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Madhya Leela 19th chapter, Dharmachari Madhye Bahuta Karma Nishtha Koti Karma Nishtha Madhye Eka Jnani Shrestha. What does it mean? There might be many people who can be Karma Nishthas. Karma Nishthas means one who is doing pious activities or Karma Kandya activities. We are talking of people who are following scriptures at least. You are not talking of sense gratifiers at the max. A person who is karmanishta is good, but better than karmanishta is eka jnani shrestha. Which jnani is this? This is the monist. This is a speculator. Jnani shrestha because at least he is meditating on something spiritual. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes ahead and says, koti jnani madhye haya eka jnana mukta, koti mukta madhye durlabha eka krishna bhakta. So there might be many impersonalists, but among all of those koti-koti, there might be one who is really liberated among the jnanis. And among those so-called liberated jnanis, there might be only one very rare, durlabha eka krishna bhakta. This is also a very similar verse in the Bhagavad Gita. What is that? Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddha yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam vetti tatvataha, Krishna says. So therefore, this phases of punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani jathare shayanam. And Shankaracharya says, iha samsare bahudustare kripaya pare pahi murare. Murare, it is only Murari, it is only Mukunda who can give us mukti, nobody else. Any spiritual activity in this existence cannot get us out of this material existence. It is only Mukunda who can give us mukti. Only Krishna who can give us mukti. And no other process can give us mukti. Only remembrance of Krishna can give us mukti. So therefore, it is very important that Prabhupada writes by ending the purport that therefore, instead of trying to unite the human society, you see, that is why every country or every society has their own interests, their own plans of gratifying the society. But nowhere we can have harmony in the society like this. So there will always be fight between each other. Prabhupada says there is no way except one has to become Krishna conscious. And if we become Krishna conscious, that is a sure shot way to get out of this continuous bondage of body, subtle body and gross body, subtle body and gross body. To exit this cycle, one has to make sure that the impressions are spiritual. We think about Krishna at the time of death. But for that, the whole life has to be given. Every minute, every second, every moment has to be given to Krishna. At least we should try to give it to Krishna. We cannot be perfect. But what is important is the attempt to give it to Krishna. What Krishna sees is the attempt, not how perfect we are. And when we make a sincere attempt, then that becomes... Because one may say, I want to remember Krishna. But can we remember Krishna if we want to? Why? Why? Is remembrance in our hand? Because why Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto, mattah smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Forgetfulness also comes from him. Remembrance also comes from him. So what is there in our hand then? Desire. We have to desire to remember Krishna. Krishna, I don't know if I'll be able to remember you or not. Krishna, please don't forget me. Please don't abandon me, Krishna. If one sincerely prays like this every moment, perhaps Krishna can show us some mercy at the time of exit. To say, okay, he was praying to me sincerely, so let me give him remembrance. So, we have to at least desire to remember Krishna always. Not only at the time of death, always. Then Krishna will give us a remember. Please help me, Krishna. I want to remember you always. Always, at all time, place and circumstances. Whether I am doing my work, whether I am doing japa, whether I am not doing japa, whether I am sleeping. That's why, if you see, Prabhupada used to say, sannyasi should study Krishna book before going to bed. Why? Because sleeping is an act of ajnana. They are going into ignorance now. So that's why great spiritualists open Krishna book and read, oh my dear Lord, I am going into ignorance now. I don't know if I will be able to remember Krishna because I am not conscious. So please, please don't abandon me. So they read Krishna book, they go into dream state to remember Krishna's past, and then they drift into deep sleep. So therefore their deep sleep also becomes yoga nidra. That's what is called as yoga nidra. So remember Krishna even in deep sleep. That's an amazing existence. So with this I'll stop here. If there are any questions, comments? Yes, Abhay? Yeah.
What was the question?
Okay. Abhay asked the question. I said internet is a very dangerous place. So is it also sense gratification, because when you type something in Google, something else pops up which is not desirable, and our mind can get drifted away. So what's the question?
Is that called sense gratification?
Okay. Is that called sense gratification? What do you think?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Prabhupada says many places that one has to perform bhakti yoga under the guidance of a spiritual master. Always we have to be under the guidance of the spiritual master. If you are not under the guidance of a spiritual master, then we can be taken for a ride. So if we are not initiated, if we are little children, who is our guider, who is our mentor? Our parents. Therefore, we have to Google in front of them taking their advice. Then they have watchful eyes. They will say, no, this is not right, Abhay. I will give you what is the meaning. If you want to have synonyms or antonyms, or you're going to search for your meanings or dictionary online, it's very important we do it with the parents, not ourselves. We have to be careful. Otherwise, the people who are designing these are designing to waylay our senses. We have to be careful. They are demons in disguise. So we have to be protected. How do we protect ourselves? You know, our tablets and computers have antivirus in them to protect the computers. We have to protect our computer, which is our chitta. That protection can be done by under the guidance of spiritual master or under the guidance of parents. It applies to us also. As adults also, we have to be careful that we use internet only for preaching purposes only, and not for anything else. Sorry? You have to open the mask and speak.
Yeah.
You should not understand anything.
Understand anything from? Correct, exactly. You should always do it under the guidance of the parents. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Please. Does it apply?
Yeah, that's right. Because you know, like even like devotees do activities that are externally can seem pious, but if the consciousness is Krishna consciousness, then even the externally they seem pious, they're actually devotional activities.
Mm.
And because it's a devotee of the Lord, so I'm a little confused on this aspect.
So I'll just repeat the question. Bhishma is a great devotee of the Lord, no doubt about it. Right? It's very apparent of how his consciousness was at the time of leaving his body. You all know Bhishma Stuti, right? Iti mate rupakal pita vitrishna bhagavati sattvata pungave vibhumi. Now, very important thing to understand is in the scriptures, why do they give these examples is, it becomes very apparent when we read the chapter Divine and Demoniac Natures. Among divine and demoniac natures, there is someone called as intermediate nature, which is called Nitya Baddhas. We are Nitya Baddhas. We cannot be Bhishma Dev. We cannot lie on a bed of arrow and still remember Krishna. So, the scriptures gives examples of divine personalities because they have the capacity to worship Krishna and go through these activities of pious and impiety. This is an example to teach us. And when they go through these activities of pious and impiety, they very quickly realize that this piety and impiety is of no use. They have to take to Krishna. And this is a lesson for us to learn. But when we as devotees do it, we have to be cognizant that we are Baddha Jivas. We should not take it for granted that I am also like Bhishma Dev. Anyways, my pious activity, I am under the shelter of Krishna. Because a slight mistake, a slight irresponsibility can be disastrous. And the example is Jadabharata. So for us Nitya Baddhas, we have to take that example and make sure we are always taking to bhakti rather than piety or impiety. If you know what I mean. It is applicable and okay for divine natures, but not for natures like us who are Tatastha Shaktis, or he was also Tatastha Shakti, but for at least with consciousness of Nitya Baddhas, like us. Because Bhishma Dev, if you really see from the Taratamya perspective, he's a very elevated personality. So the scriptures use certain personality to teach us some lessons out of it. So yes, we take examples like that, not to criticize Bhishma Dev, but for us to learn a lesson that we have to be careful that we don't take to take pious and impious karma very lightly, or not assume that we are always under the shelter of Krishna. Krishna will always give us shelter, but are we under the shelter of Krishna is a question we should always keep asking ourselves. That we have to tread very carefully. We might be always under the shelter of Krishna, but we have to be careful. That's what I mean. But the devatas don't assume that. They don't assume that I'm always anyways protected. Doesn't matter, I'll go and steal the cow. You know, you never thought like that. I'm a devotee anyways, so what if I go and steal the cow, you see? So devotees are very careful in that sense. At least the devatas are very careful. So imagine how careful we must be in that sense. That's how I would take it, Mataji. So I have to carefully take my sadhana.
Yeah, sorry, because I was a little confused about pious and impious activities. We use an example because he's the devotee of the Lord. And generally we consider pious and impious activities. We consider devotion as higher than pious and impious activities.
Yeah.
So that's why I was just a little bit confused. But now we are that divine personality, and this is like, I think it's a bit
different. Yeah. So the lesson that we have to take from this pastime, from this Dyuhu's reincarnated birth, is to say that he took a vow of celibacy, right? We all know that he took a vow of celibacy to protect his father. Did he take a vow of celibacy to worship Krishna? Did he take a vow of celibacy so that he can actually be a celibate and get liberated as sannyasi? We don't come upon. Of course, he's a devotee. But the scriptures are teaching us a lesson. When he took a celibacy vow, he did not say, Krishna, I only love you and I don't want to get married because I'm going to dedicate my whole life for you. That lesson is not being taught here. But he took a vow so that he could protect his father, so he could get married. So it's an act of piety. You see? So, piety in itself can be binding. But piety with element of Krishna is not binding. That doesn't become piety, then that becomes a karma. That is the lesson we have to take. So that doesn't mean devotees do not do pious activities. Devotees do all activities. It's not only pious, but it is a karma. A karma. So it is liberating activity. Any activity that the devotees do, for example, devotees feed a poor person. Do they just feed? No, we all know we feed prasadam. So we are not just helping his stomach, but we are actually helping his soul by giving prasadam. So simple. So we also do activities, but they are beyond piety and impiety. So this lesson of Bhishma Devi, you have to think that all that the piety and impiety lessons that we take, element of Krishna was not there. But because he had the association of Vasishta and Ganga, that Vasu was able to get liberated at the end of life so that he could remember Krishna. Because all through his life also he demonstrated that when he came in association with Krishna, because he was a divine personality. So his consciousness, so you can see the journey of piety and impiety, Vasu getting cursed. This is there, so many examples. You see the example of Naradaman, Upabharhana. Upabharhana was actually glorifying the woman in the council of the Vaishnavas. Got cursed. Made servant's boy, Naradamuni. You see? And again, Naradamuni did not get liberated on the same time. He was there in one whole kalpa within the body of Vishnu, and the next kalpa he becomes Naradamuni. So there are stories of reincarnation. All of these incidents are there to teach us that only bhakti is liberating. But at the same time, pious and impious in itself is not liberating. But piety has to be laced with Krishna consciousness. That consciousness is very important. Does it answer?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes. Comment in that regard. I would say that it would be interesting to indicate. I would say that it would be helpful if we can analyze the life of Bhishma Devi, similar like Srila Prabhupada, the different stage in the life of people, evolving process. In the beginning, Prabhupada, for example, was developing his career, family life. But inside, the internal mood as a devotee, it wasn't fully expressed, but it wasn't the same with Bhishma Devi. He was performing his political activities, family duties as a head of the dynasty. But his internal world and his consciousness, it was gradually awakening.
Yep.
And of course he was involved in that family affairs, part of duty because of Varna and Ashram as well, Varna Ashram Dharma. So, it's similar, Prabhupada, or many devotees as well, because of the national level. But the spiritual life was expressed more in his last part of life.
Yep.
And it was that we remember him more.
Yep.
Not because he was the head of the dynasty. He was a pure devotee. That is why we remember him as the Mahayana.
Yep.
And similar with Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, we just acknowledge his whole life in preparation, but we emphasize more when he was fully engaged in devotional service or expressive in that way. Similar with Bhishma Devi. Different stage in the evolving process.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. You could understand it like that. Although Prabhupada, we take Prabhupada as a Nitya Siddha, he manifested his leela as if he is a grastha, as if he is engaged in his family activities. But as you said, his consciousness was always about Krishna. And even in the case of Bhishma Devi, if you see, although he knew he was on the adharma side, he was always favorable to the Pandavas. He was always favorable that I want to serve Krishna. But it only takes a powerful personality like Bhishma Devi to be on the other side of Krishna, so that Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma Devi also. It could only be his own devotee who can be on the adharma side and still be able to fight with Krishna. So yeah, you can take it like that. Thank you, Mahathir.
The fighting also was his relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
Only in that way he can interact and reciprocate with Krishna in a loving way, fighting.
Yeah. Yes, Shaurya Rasa. Yes, Prabhu. Thank you, Mahathir.
Just a quick question. Understanding Bhishma Dev's blessing mentioned, would we classify Bhishma Dev as a great devotee or a pure devotee of Prabhupada? Because great devotees are not necessarily pure devotees who are always like, but Bhishma Dev is master. But coming back to the vow, his consciousness of taking that vow and not attending it was not Dr.
It doesn't seem to be like
that. It doesn't seem to be. But how do we where is how do we place in there as a great duty or a
I don't know, Prabhuji, honestly. Because from the definitions of pure devotional service, anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam, anukulena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. But this was demonstrated by Bhishma Dev, at least at the time of passing away, clearly demonstrated by Krishna. And Krishna himself comes there, comes to give darshan to Bhishma Dev. Imagine the status of Bhishma Dev, that Krishna comes himself. In fact, the Pandavas are worried about running the kingdom, but Krishna was worried that Bhishma Dev is going to leave his body. Krishna brings them to Bhishma Dev. Such is the reciprocation of Bhakta Vatsala Krishna towards his devotees. So from that perspective, we can see and see iti mati rupakalpitam. You see, thinking, feeling, willing, I have to invest in Krishna. This is actually a trait of a pure devotee. That at the time of death, at least now I have finished with all of my things, I have to now remember Krishna all the time. And that he cannot do if he has not done it in his whole life. So therefore, at least from that incident we can see he's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's a great devotee of the Lord. Now, can we put him with the other acharyas? I'm not sure, probably.
You know, commonly it's structured as a great devotee and then becomes a pure devotee. Is that the transition path?
Correct. Yeah, it could be. Because Bhishma Dev's incident is not a fall down. Again, you should say it's a honing of his consciousness. So imagine the curse of Vasishtha Muni as a blessing. Brahmadev, Brahma is a devotee of the Lord. Any devotee curses, it's always a blessing. So when Bhishmadeva fell down, it was actually a curse or a blessing. From one perspective, it's a curse. But look at the end of his life, it's a blessing. Because Krishna was there. Similarly, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, it looks like a curse, but it ended up as a blessing. So devotees, when they curse, it's not a curse. Devotee can never curse anyone because he is full of Krishna. So how can he put hatred to anyone? Brahmadev is full of Krishna inside. So when he scolds also, it is only blessing. So in that sense, it was a blessing for Bhishma Dev.
Bhishma Dev as Mahajan is just learning that we probably start off with sadhana, go through a great devotee, and then the path is
true. Yeah, at least until unless the consciousness develops to that stage.
I think in this example is consciousness stage.
Yeah, we have to be gradual, we have to understand ourselves, see where our consciousness lies and try to hone it all the time based on our activities, our thought processes and things like that. We have to stop now, probably we have done all the time. Stop here. We'll take it offline, probably. Stop here, probably. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Kishila Prabhupada Ananda Koti Vaishnava Ki Jani Raya Govardhana.